Okay, we're going.
Great. Well, the meeting, we'll skip the pledge because there's no flag. We'll do that next month.
Okay.
Okay, call the meeting to order. We have a quorum. Approve the minutes from December's meeting.
I'll move it.
Okay, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Great. Chris White, are you going to talk on poly?
I'm here for resolution 1.
Okay. I didn't know if you were.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. So we'll.
Tim said he's going to just.
Yeah, I didn't know if you were here for that one or that. So we'll just put this one off till next month.
That's what he asked. I mean, yeah. He said he was going to forward the reports to you and I, and then he said.
I didn't get it.
Yeah, I didn't get it either.
Okay.
But he said that just put it off till next month.
It's fine.
He
did it. Okay. So, Chris, can we jump up to Chris's resolution so Chris can get,
what's the
number? Is that all right? 119, which is, just give me a second here, Chris, which is authorizing the chairman of the Elsa County Legislature to execute a state assistance contract with the New York State DEC for grant funding for the Butternut Cove Culvert Rehabilitation and Slope Stabilization Project. Okay, Chris?
This is a grant that the Department of Environment applied for back in late 2013. I'm sending around a map and I'll send around a photo. Some of you are well aware of this. We had a major culvert along the railroad corridor by the Ashokan collapse over a period of years. And back in 2013, our DPW did a quick evaluation of it. They thought that they could just fix the wing walls, which you see are collapsed. And then many of you know we did a feasibility study in 2015, and we actually went in the culvert, and we found that it's torquing and it needed to be replaced. So we had applied for this money already. It's $329,000, and it will go towards the rehabilitation of this. It will restore the embankment, put new wing walls, new abutments, and actually daylight the creek so that the cement bottom of the culvert is taken out. And right now, there's no fish passage from the reservoir up because you have a plunge pool and then you have a cement bottom. So I'm going to be bringing a number of grants to you over the next months.
Good.
Again, we know we got to come back to you for final approvals for the Ashokan Rail Trail.
Well, this should be fixed no matter what's going to be there. You know?
Yeah, it's the problem is it's so remote. You can see on the map, like, there's almost no way to get equipment in there.
I've been back there.
Yeah, we walked in.
And this doesn't really do it service because that could be 30 feet down. That could be 40 feet down.
I got
a cliff
another,
like this, which is
this is what feet. The track looks like too. If you want to,
yeah. And when I walked in,
that's looking down at the culvert.
Yeah, the first thing you think of is how could you ever get stuff back, equipment back here?
Yeah, it's narrow, and on both sides we have on one side we have a bridge out, and on the other side we have track that's cribbed.
Yeah.
And it doesn't support the weight of it. Wouldn't support the weight of equipment.
Okay.
So, again, I'm just trying to queue up these grants with the hope that the Ashokan Rail Trail is approved over the summer and the fall. I'm going to have another grant from DEC next month as well.
It
takes them about 6 to 7 months to sign a contract. Yeah. So I'm just lining up our ducks.
Great.
Can you remind us what because that $300-something thousand isn't going to be enough to totally fix this?
No,
right?
Our estimated cost right now is that the whole replacement is $750,000.
Yeah.
So this grant, originally we thought it was going to be 75. You usually apply for 75%, but when we realized we had to do the whole barrel of the culvert, it went down. Now we're around 44%. And it's not bad because we would have had to replace it anyway. Mm-hmm. And we went back to DEC and we said, what do you think of us daylighting it? And they actually were pretty psyched that we were doing that. And the Ashokan Stream Management Program had walked this with Aaron Bennett and me, and they had suggested something like that. So they're pretty happy about the direction.
And how are they getting the equipment back
there? We would do this as part of building the trail.
Yeah,
so we'd
wait
until
they got there.
We'd have to work our way out from both ends. You know, we'd.
You have to come from Shokan to here, I would think.
This is near Longyear Road, so we may have a secondary access there, but
need Pine View Bakery.
Yeah.
Almost directly across
exactly.
The street from Pine View Bakery.
But you need more than one access, because otherwise you have a truck that has to go in, a mile or two, and then back up.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, we're going to try to restore the Boyceville trestle. We're working, still working with FEMA to finalize the money on that. And we would come in from Shokan or some other area, but we've got to fix the track in
between. Bring a barge in.
Huh?
Bring a barge in from the water.
We actually
bring equipment in.
Floated that idea.
I don't think they'd go for it.
DEP is not. And no, you can't get up the creek. You know, it's right. It's pretty.
I mean, is that 100 years old? 110 years old? This culvert? It's got to be when they.
This was constructed in 1913.
Yeah, when they did 104 years old. When they built the reservoir.
And it may not have been sized properly. I think one of the reasons it was blowing out is because you have two streams going there, and at high flows, I don't think this was sized properly. So this is nice because it opens up the original channel.
Is there a particular storm that blew this one out, or was
no.
it just
no,
slowly
it
over
was,
time degraded?
I've seen in the literature in the late 80s it was already starting to come apart.
Yeah.
But it's incredibly beautiful there, and to open this stream up, and if you're walking or biking through there, now can see the stream.
Yeah, that's a nice. Trim some trees while you're down there.
Yeah, we got all the ash trees to take out. That's going to be
are
nice.
There a lot, are there a lot of them down
there's
there?
There's a ton.
Wow.
Mm.
Could
anybody
move this?
Legislative Barnhold moved it. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Legislative Heppner. Any other questions for Chris? Thanks, Chris. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
And just one other thing, if I could. I have track repairs coming before your legislature in April. You know, the washouts above Boyceville. We've engineered the design, and we're out to bid now for reconstruction of three areas where Rail Explorer is going to be operating. So that'll be coming up as well.
Chris, can I ask you another quick question?
Yeah.
I think I saw your name on some of the folks that live in Boyceville, a little concerned about those rail cars making noise. You met with that? I mean,
we're meeting on Wednesday.
Oh, the 8th, right?
Yeah.
The 8th,
we're at the lot. That's why I'm not going to make Economic Development Committee, because we have Rail Explorers coming down to talk to them.
Okay, good.
And we're trying to make it, I mean, I get what they're doing. They live on a really quiet road, and we don't want to. You know,
I just know they're concerned, and when I saw you were going to be here, I was like, that's good, you know, at least we're reaching out, we're trying to work with.
And we've been talking to them about where we could have people come off the corridor where it's least disruptive, you know. We may need to do some fencing at some point with some of the neighbors.
Are those cars noisy?
No.
They seem to think they are, though.
You know what it is? It's just having that activity. Because think about what their frame of reference is. There hasn't been
nothing.
A train there.
A couple
there
fishermen go by every now and then.
Yeah, since the hurricane. So.
It's a dead end road that runs right next to the creek and the trail and the water and the railroad. And it's, you know, the houses can be 50 feet away in some instances, or they're close.
I talked to our trail engineer about leaving, you know, the tracks go to 28A, and then I've asked him to leave an additional segment of track to get us to the trailhead so that people are offloading on the east side of 28A.
Okay.
So, we're
trying. And there's a lot of open area over there. There's a parking lot over there.
Yeah, and they'll be developing a parking lot where the shuttle bus can just come in and pick up people and then
that way
back
the cars aren't
Venetia.
Going down there and picking everybody.
Exactly.
That's a good idea.
So we'll try. We'll see how it goes on Wednesday.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. I just didn't. Like I said, I saw your name.
Yeah. And if you have constituents that are concerned, just
through my father's.
Well, in that case.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No. No.
We'll have to do
a lot of them. A lot of them are good friends. Or, you know, they. I know a lot. I know all of them. So, thanks.
Thanks again.
Good. Have a good night.
Yeah.
On the videos of those rail cars, you can hear people like the guy who's showing somebody that they're talking. And while they're doing it, so clearly it can't be too loud. All you hear is like the click, 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 click as they go over there.
Well, like Chris saying, I think their concern is there's nobody back there except a couple of fishermen, and now it could be, you know, 10 hours on a Saturday of cars and people.
Yeah.
And
people laughing and joking.
Well, that's sure, they're going to be talking and enjoying themselves. And
300 people a day from zero.
Right, right. Well, right. And you know what it's going to do? It's going to increase fishing because people are going to say, wow, this place is beautiful. So now they're not going to be in rail cars. They're going to go get their fishing poles next time they come up and park back
there. They do it in the Adirondacks, and they're pretty close to some really high-end houses, and they made it work.
It's going to work.
They're respectful.
It'll work.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Do you want these pictures back, Chris, or are you good?
Yeah, here. I'll give them to the next committee if you guys don't
mind. I'll just.
I'm going to keep mine.
All right.
I'll keep a set in the minutes.
Good.
I'll just take one of those sets.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
I'm sorry, I could ask a quick question. Will resolutions 87 be discussed today or for next week?
Well, I will tell you, can I mention something?
Yeah.
I actually wasn't prepared to have it voted on or submitted this month. I was hoping the committee would just discuss it. So
we can
if you want, move it up. Is that what you would like to discuss?
Because I'm here with my daughter.
Yeah, we can discuss. We'll move that one up first.
That's
what we do. We when people are here, we like to get those resolutions up first so you don't have to sit.
Just for the record, cannot go to the floor this month because it has not passed Public Works. You can pass it, but it won't go to the floor this month until it passes Public Works.
Yeah, we can hold off on it.
You also, but let's discuss. I mean, let's talk about it because we're here, and so at least get it going.
So we'll take Resolution 87, which is.
I'll make a motion to
discuss
wait for
it.
Discussion. Yeah.
I'll second it.
Okay. So. Do you want?
I mean, I'm just I'm a public school teacher and I have an electric car and I go to Kingston very often. So I just wanted to give some input as to like how I see the situation.
Sure. Did you? Can I ask you a quick question? Did you sign Tom's
letter?
Is your name okay?
Yes.
Because Tom sent Tom's letter had
you
know, six or eight people that had signed
it.
So okay, that's great.
So what I've noticed in and I'm not sure about the language of the resolution, but what I've noticed. Coming to Kingston, I come there very often to Wall Street for business or just for pleasure because it's all these nice stores there. And during the weekdays, definitely, but also during the weekends, what I found is county cars. These are clearly county cars. They're parked in the electric car stripes. The parking spots there almost always occupied. The one at the courthouse.
Family court.
Those are not even electric cars that are parked there. Those are usually cop cars, I believe, and they occupy the spots. And then even at the DMV, there's this white car. I don't know who that belongs to. It's, I believe, a white Ford electric, and it's always there, even on the weekends. So when I'm concerned that what this is doing is it's really a disincentive to people who would buy electric cars to buy electric cars. Because I think somehow there's this perception of electric car drivers that they want free electricity. They don't.
Right.
They just want a charging station that charges a fair price. I mean, it's amazing that the Ulster County Chamber of Commerce is sponsoring this. This is incredible, which is actually great business sense, because if I put my car there for 2 hours, I will barely take a dollar worth of electricity. But I will go to a store because I will go somewhere and eat. I can't just write or spend buy a cup of coffee. So it makes incredible business sense to do that. But the fact that these spots are almost always occupied, it just seems to be the whole purpose of the exercise.
Well, and I in my conversations with Tom, it doesn't make a lot of sense for the chamber to be funding these to pay for county vehicles to get charged.
Absolutely.
It doesn't make sense. Why, if you told the chamber today they gave $1,000 and it's not available for people to come up and use it to go shopping, it's basically county cars.
Absolutely.
I don't think that's how they intended their money to be spent.
Absolutely.
Trace.
Oh,
no, please go ahead.
So, a couple things. I think we have to remember just, and I've asked Ken to provide it, but I didn't get it yet, the initial grant whereby we got the charging stations, and again we're talking about a defined period of time, but it had to do first and foremost with county vehicles.
Right.
What I agree with, and what I think, because I have some problems with some of the suggestions you've and I want to talk them all through, but what I think definitively we need to change first and foremost in the law is no electric vehicle spot in the county should be allowed to have any non-EV vehicle in it ever. I'd rather the spot be empty and available for an EV vehicle, and that includes county vehicles. You know what I mean? And just period. I don't think there should be a non-EV vehicle allowed in the EV spot forever. We saw in the Green Fleet Policy report that came out a few days ago or whatever that. The numbers were moving up in terms of the number of charges. We didn't make the full reimbursement of the money that was fronted by the chamber, we didn't expend all that money. I'm looking forward to the day where we exceed it, and where I hope and anticipate that we will reach a point. We can have the debate back and forth, but we're going to reach a point where we're going to have to charge. I just think we're not quite there yet because we're still not meeting that that initiative that was put forward by the chamber. And I've heard your sentiment repeatedly that the vehicle users aren't looking for a free ride. Well, it's really nice. They're more than ready to pay. But I think just by removing the non-EV vehicles from the spots is going to make a big change.
And I think we should put a two-hour time limit.
And that's the other thing. So, and the other thing, I talked to Ken about it a little more when I've asked for him to get for us. Now it'll be for next month, but ideally we'll get it before. Is the actual breakdown vehicle by vehicle of the time uses? Because I also don't want to make the usage too short. Because, for example, I don't know how long it takes for your vehicle to charge.
Right. I think. Yeah,
but
I
two think hours, I was told, is about the median. So, in your example of coming to Kingston, parking your car, you have 2 hours. Whether we're charging you or not. You now go to lunch and do a little shopping. If you know that you have to move that car in 2 hours or it's going to get towed, that's totally going to change how you move around the city. So I think we have to pick a number, and likely it's going to be more than 2 hours. I don't know what the number would be, but I just don't think we're there yet. I think when we start to see the pressure for those spots overwhelming, where people are backed up, because the problem you're talking about is people in the spots that aren't using it at all.
Right.
People are staying for extended period. They haven't.
But you know another thing, though, Trace, in my conversations with Tom, people are parking there with EVs at times, and then they don't want to go after their car is charged, fully charged. They don't want to spend $3 and park on a street, so they just leave it there all day.
Right.
So you need to, and what it is it's changing people's mindset to say, hey. Just like if I go to Kingston to go out to dinner, and I go and I put 2 hours in the coin meter, I know in 2 hours I got to either go move the car or put another two quarters in to fill it up. It's changing the mindset of people too. Like when we talk about the plastic bag legislation, it's not necessarily it's a lot of things, but if we say to people 2 hours, and if the car's only 90% filled, and there's other vehicles that want to get in there, then so be it. You have to move.
The issue with the two hours is not just about the ability to fully charge the vehicle. It's about the ability to go about your. You know, if you parked in the non-EV spot, you could park for. You could go to
but
a three-hour lunch.
But you're paying
for the EV spot, not for the fuel. But you're paying. If you're paying parts
not
of the
in
EV,
all the spots.
Yes, absolutely.
If not on a Saturday. Or
not on a Saturday.
Or a Friday
paying
night
any,
or a Thursday
you're
night.
You're not paying for any spot on a Saturday, Friday, or Thursday in our lot. If you park in the non-EV spot two over.
Okay.
On any given day, either everybody's paying for their parking.
What if you have a permit?
Well, I'm not talking about.
Well, we have county employees that are county permits that are parking in those EV spots all day.
I can add to that.
All day. And they have a county permit, so they're not paying anything. They could go to another parking spot in the county parking lot, and they're not doing it.
And that's the example that you're talking about, this county vehicle that
because
stays
that's always
put the whole time.
Stays
no,
month.
This is a personal vehicle.
Yes. I mean, I don't know if it just has a county number on it. It's a Ford Focus Electric.
It's the one in the picture.
No,
yeah,
no,
I think
Ford Focus.
It's a pool vehicle, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's in the letter. The pictures are in the letter. Yes,
and he says it's not to do it anymore.
Well, that's good, but he's still been doing it.
He hasn't. I don't think he's been doing it since they spoke.
Your white card. Can I add to that? Like from an EV driver's perspective, I think what I'm hearing is that, which is absolutely true, that if somebody's allowed to hawk a charging station just because they have an electric car, that's unfair. Because but also we have to really look at the value closely. That how long do people usually charge their cars for? Right. Because if somebody's, let's say somebody's traveling across, like you're going on 87 and you say, Kingston has all these charging stations, that's awesome, I'm going to take a break, but they're actually going much further up. How much charge are they going to get in an hour, right? So 2 hours to me seems slightly on the lower side, but I agree with you that once they've exceeded a certain, let's say we make it three, I think you could easily, the charge point that's easily done, that you could configure it so that if now they stay for more than 3 hours, you start charging them parking rates.
Right.
Okay, so
I asked that question, right, and I was told that we can't do it because ChargePoint charges for the
electricity.
But then, so it's
But they can count the time. They can count the time because there's a clock that runs there. So I would sooner just figure
out the number that makes sense when we get to this point being a problem. And maybe it's in stages. Maybe as we take away the EV vehicles and we have talks. You're talking about a particular county vehicle. I'm sure we could address that. And Ken told me that we're getting another charging station that they're going to put.
We applied for three new ones.
Well, one of them they're going to put, according to Ken, I don't know if this is going to change, but they're going to put it on the other side of
the
employees only side.
Section.
So that, in theory, should reduce the need of an employee.
But can the general public still get there?
No.
Except
on the weekends. But on a weekday, it would alleviate that.
I think that
white vehicle just sitting
there.
I don't see how that could work
because I saw the application that the county filled out for the DEC, and one of the questions for the grant said, is the public charging a primary usage for this? And the county checked yes on all three of them. So how can you put it in parking?
We have way more than three more coming in. There's several different grants.
I saw three grants. Maybe they were for...
That's what I'm saying.
I saw three separate grants. Maybe they were for 2, 2, and 2, or 1, 3, and 3. I don't know the exact numbers.
Right.
But it said, is public charging the primary purpose of going for this grant? And the county checked yes. So I don't see how you can do that and then put them in an employee parking only spot that is accessible just on weekends.
Right, and nights.
Because then you're not filling out the form. And I saw those. I mean, they were just filled out in the last couple months.
I mean, I would like
that's
to
not
see.
Good at
yeah,
all.
I would like to see the data, the specific data. I don't think it's ridiculous because we have a green fleet policy that our green fleet policy is first and foremost about greening our own fleet. So in the ideal world of the green fleet policy pushed to its logical extension, we're going to need more charging stations than we have. And that's a good thing. But I also think it's a good thing to have charging stations accessible to the public and to not have people hogging the stations and to certainly not have, which, by the way, that change that we made in this legislation that, I forget what the language is, but we made a change that made it okay for non-EV vehicles to park in those spots. In its first draft, in its first form, no non-EV vehicle, EV vehicles could park in those spots. And then in an attempt to put a time limit on, we put a time limit for non-EV vehicles.
Right, and I think that's counterproductive.
It's totally a mistake.
Because every hour a non-EV vehicle is parked there, an EV vehicle is not getting charged.
It's a potential, yeah.
Right, it's potential.
And like I said, I'd rather see those sit empty for the time, for the one time you or anyone else shows up with an EV vehicle.
I think the numbers are much higher. I think what you would see is that once people are guaranteed, once the word gets around that those spots are really available for EV chargers, what you will see is a spike.
It's a spike.
Like it's this Sunil Upoz. I work there part time and I also charge my car there. And their charging stations, they're strictly policed in terms of that nobody else parks there. They have a very strict policy there. And once they went to fair rates, initially they were charging this exorbitant rate. And as soon as they went to fair rates, like 10 cents a kilowatt hour, which is what they were paying to Central Hudson, there's been a spike in the usage. People have bought cars. The president of the college bought a car. There are other faculty I know who bought cars just because they now know that these are spots are available and a fair price is being charged. And I think we could sort of have a similar model here, and it would be.
Do they have a time limit on those spots?
They don't, and I think that is the problem. But I think right now it's just because they have 6 spots and not enough EV users. I think right now it hasn't really surfaced.
Right, we're in a transitional. We are too.
We're
in a transitional period.
Right.
I think with this, which is good, which is exciting. I mean, I'm excited to see the increase in usage,
One of the things is, we did take money from the Chamber of Commerce to promote economic development in the areas we put the charging stations, and. You've seen press releases how when we did these stations, they were going to promote economic development. I don't see how you do that when we allow somebody to park there all day.
Right, I hear you.
You can't have it both ways.
But I also feel like if there's one, if we change the law to remove non-EV vehicles, to make that a prohibited practice, mm-hmm. and we begin by addressing with the, I'm hearing over and over that it's one vehicle. I don't know whose vehicle. I'm assuming looking at it, it's a pool vehicle. So I don't know who we talk to about that vehicle, but we talk to someone about that vehicle not sitting there. It's a, I mean,
well, I've had discussions with Ken about this ad nauseum, Mr. Pinnell. He did point out that we do need to charge our own vehicles. We have county vehicles that need to be charged.
Right, that's fine.
So that they will need to be parked there sometime. He believes that photograph in the letter was taken at a time when they were trying to clear the parking lot. That's why there were other vehicles parked in the place, because they had moved the vehicles to in this picture
right.
in order to...
Right, I saw the email.
You know, to...
I mean, I have pictures from last night as well.
I mean, when does...
My internet's not working, so I can't show them to you. I have pictures from last night and the night before. This is really an ongoing thing.
No, I've seen those cars.
Yes.
If he says this is, well, they're moving snow,
but he
and he's fishing a little bit. It doesn't look like there's snow on the ground right there.
Seems like
and
the
I think
basic
that's a
problem.
Fleet car. I think you're right. I think that could be parked somewhere else once it's charged. And I think the employee that was doing it was spoken to, and Mr. Pinnell assures me that he's not going to park there anymore.
Well, I'd be interested in seeing the numbers in terms of the charging time and having this. I mean, like I said, in the immediate fix, immediately changing it to prohibit non-EV vehicles, and I'd be interested in having a discussion about at this earliest stage, knowing it might be different in a year, it might be different after a spike, but at this earliest stage, if we're going to put a time limit, what's a reasonable time limit? Is 4 hours too long? Is 3.5? You know, because I also think that right, EV vehicle, here's two EV users, you're going to be, because you're sensitive to the need for the charging station, I'd like to hope that most EV drivers are also going to be sensitive. We're talking about a specific vehicle that's a county vehicle, but that you, as an EV driver who pulls into, you're not going to leave it there for 6 hours.
You would go back and move it.
You're going to be very sensitive and respectful.
Absolutely.
So,
people are.
So
yes.
We could pick a number, though, that would allow you a full charge and also understand the possibility that you might be in a meeting or at an extended lunch or in the middle of something that takes more than 2 hours. And I don't know what that number is right now, but I also appreciate that whatever, if we talk about a number, that number can change it. We can change it again once we have new numbers to support that.
Let's she had her hand up. I'm sorry.
I had a constituent reach out to me with pictures also, and one of them was a non-EV vehicle. I think it was a county vehicle, and then it was the county executives were taking up to two spots. It is possible if the charge is complete. It didn't used to tell us this, but it does now. And so you can park in the third or fourth if the cord is long enough. And you actually can charge. But I mentioned it to the sheriff because...
But there's only two cords.
You can run it to
the
next spot.
But that means somebody's parked in one of the spots that's not using it.
Right, then you have to make it a spot.
They shouldn't be there. They're not charging, they shouldn't be there.
Other people's property.
Right.
No, you can. You absolutely can. If the machine is giving you a message that the charge is complete, all you do is unhook it, go over and tap up with your card and plug it in to yours. Please let me finish. So my point was that I mentioned it to the sheriff, and because I was concerned about, and I said, could the guards just nicely ask whoever it is that's parking there that doesn't, and he mentioned it, and the next time I came in, a guard came over, didn't recognize my car, and just wanted to check to be sure that I had an EV. So I want to just, commend the sheriff that he did take action, and he said that he would tell the staff at all of the locations just to be in communication with people. The education is the first step. Some people might really not know that it's a charging station or whatever. And I generally I want to stay out of this because I have to be fine with whatever you guys come up with, but I do want to suggest that where it says for more than 2 hours, you might consider for more than 2 hours after the charge is complete. So that if somebody is at an extended lunch,
but if it takes
or more than an hour after the charge is complete. But the charging, like for me to charge my car is an hour and a half. But if you're...
Mine takes 4 hours.
4 hours. So
Right. So I think that number will vary. And I think that's a very fair point. Depending on how far the person is coming from, I think if they really need to go back a far distance, then we should let them charge their car completely mm-hmm. because they might be depending on the fact that they'll be able to do this.
Well, then if somebody's charging uh-huh. and the car is showing it's being charged, then don't write them a ticket. If it's showing that the car is charged, then give them. Then if they come back in a half an hour later and his car's still there, then you give them a ticket.
Yes.
Well, there's no ticket component. Well, the only penalty is a tow. You get towed.
Well, then we can change it. That's why we're discussing it.
I think tow would be very, very heavy penalty.
It shouldn't be county vehicles parked in it over the weekend.
Right.
Shouldn't be county. Should be no county vehicles.
Unless it's a
sheriff's vehicle or a vehicle that's going to be used for the weekend.
Well, any county vehicle, if it's charging, actively charging.
Yeah, but if it takes 2 hours to charge it, you're going to let it sit all weekend to charge in 2 hours?
It.
But then you got to pay people overtime to come in and move the cars.
I have no idea what you're saying.
Right. If you unplug the car that's charging, or like my car, the alarms would go off. I'd be a little careful about touching anyone's car. Because they may, like my car has a setting, as soon as you unplug it and it senses, because it has these sensors that I'm around with my key. So if somebody unplugs it when the key is not around, it just goes off. So I wouldn't want to touch anyone's car for that reason.
Geez, but what about kids just pulling them out and running? Okay, let's have their
name. I was just thinking, first, I agree that, we can't be having constant examples of county cars filling up these spots. Just as the hosting county, I think we need to show some of the same etiquette, they seem to talk about in the EV, community. I know in a work day and county government things can be crazy, but figuring out to get someone to run down and move the cars to an appropriate spot, and check, especially because to my next point, we can utilize our current workforce in terms of security and sheriffs at these facilities already. I mean, where these two stations are at the county building, you literally have a parking attendant like 5 feet away who can be monitoring this. And not even, not like a hawk, and we have security guards in evenings. I've seen them when I left meetings that do around on the parking lot. They literally walk the perimeter of the parking lot. So I think what we choose to be the mechanism, I agree we shouldn't be towing, but I think maybe a small, reasonably priced ticket if it is an excessive violation, that we could even put the revenue right back into this fund from the Chamber of Commerce, so that way at least it's going back towards the cause or something like that. I think we have some more simple ways to mediate this issue and with what our existing resources already without getting too crazy into the policy, with some really simple actions and changes. The hardest thing I think is trying to figure out how long they'll let them stay there. We can all agree on it. I think a $20 ticket a lot easier than what's going to be a 3 hour versus 4 hour, length of stay. That I find is the most challenging, especially if we're getting more employee-based or just more in general charging stations. I think that'll open up some of the pressure.
I just have a question because it came up in a discussion. If there's a car plugged in, can I tell if it's still charging or it's fully charged?
Yes.
On the meter?
Yeah,
you can tell on the car itself.
But how do I see that on the car? How do I, if it's like not my car?
Yeah, you see it on the car because there's a light on in my car, like volts there.
Where it plugs in?
Yeah, where it plugs in on the dash.
Okay, how am I going to see that on your
visible,
dash?
It's visible.
Oh, I can
on the dashboard, like you see the steering next to it.
Oh.
So if it's charging, then it's solid. And as soon as it finishes charging, it starts blinking.
Okay,
so you can tell. Right.
And the other question
is true
on your car, right?
On my car. But you can, that's what I was saying before, Fawn. You can actually tell at the charging station. It says Number one is charging, number two, complete.
Right.
And it didn't used to tell you that. It was blank, and you went over, and you plugged, and so I think that the industry itself is trying to get it right a little bit at a time. But once I knew, in this case, it was a car, the county executive's car, was complete, and I was able to park in the third space, and because it said it was complete, I wouldn't touch it if it didn't. But when it said number one is complete, I just went over and took it. And then it said, if you want to use it, tap the thing again. I tapped it and I plugged it in. And I've since done that with the car in the second spot over. But again, I wouldn't have done it except for the machine. Because I wouldn't know to look in somebody's car.
Yes, you're right.
Different.
Right. And it's an accepted EV etiquette that people say that if my car is done charging, then go ahead, take the plug out.
That's but would your alarm go off though?
I think once it's finished charging, it would.
It wouldn't go off.
Right, right. It's during the charging process that would go off.
But can I ask you a question, Andrew? When you take that, the charging hose out and put it in your car, do you worry about it going over the hood of the next vehicle?
No, I mean I'm as careful.
You know,
with
some people are sensitive.
Car, especially, you know, with the county.
Well, county car nobody's going to care.
But with anybody's car, I'm careful. As I would be with my own car. I mean, sometimes I've had to, like, really flip the cord.
No, I'm just asking, because the last thing you want to do is somebody come out and see the cord across their hood onto somebody else's car.
Yeah.
No,
then you're going to have to pick up a fight.
You put it back in the thing, you tap your car, and then...
Okay.
Yeah.
Just a question.
Yeah.
And I just have one other point that somebody made. Someone with electric vehicle was coming up to go on was wondering about going on a trail, and with these new trailheads with the Ashokan thing, they're going to be charging stations on the Ashokan trailheads, and there was a discussion about somebody being able to charge there if there was a time limit, if they were going to go on a bike ride that would be all day or on a hike all day, but you might have different rules for different charging stations too.
Yeah.
Like you might have a different rule there than you would at the county.
Yeah.
I think that this is a debate that's in flux and changing as there becomes more demand. And the charging for the charging station solves some of it, you know, and then if you were charging for the time or if there were additional penalties for charging beyond, we're not there yet in terms of the demand for the space. I think I'd be super interested to see once we, I'm assuming we can get support to remove non-EV vehicles from the spots. If we remove non-EV vehicles from the spots, and whether through a time limit or a discussion with the executive about a kind of shared etiquette with getting that other vehicle, because one of those vehicles is not an EV vehicle, right? So one of those vehicles wouldn't be allowed to park there anyway. And if then the pool vehicle is sitting there consistently when it's not charging, with getting that out of the way, it'll be interesting to see how the usage starts to spike. In the example that you gave, as people know that it's going to be a more reliable spot, more available spot.
Right. Is the charging stations there at the probation center? Are those? They're also open to the public, right?
Yeah.
At the courthouse.
Right?
No, probation on Broadway.
On Broadway. Because again, that I think that suffers from the same problem. There are always two cars that are like these are usually I think law enforcement vehicles that are there
that are not EV.
I just know like up at the county courthouse, parking is so tight as it is for the staff. Now you've taken two parking spots away and you've added the EV ones. Mm-hmm. It's become I know like the staff is you know there's been people who have the electric vehicles park there even when they're full because they can't find a parking spot, so they're allowed to park there. So they're just taking those spots and not even plugging in all day, and they're parked for 8 hours or 6 hours, however long they're
We definitely have a parking challenge in that area, all over, but in that building.
But you don't want them. Maybe you find another spot up there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we own right next to Ugly Gus's is a county-owned parking lot. Maybe you move them from the courthouse and you put them over there. It's not that far. So it's the same a block or two. That place, that parking spot's empty.
Yeah, I'd like to, I think we should ask for the report not only by zip code, so then we'll see which are county vehicles, which are not county vehicles, but by site, because I'd be very curious what the charging numbers are like at the courthouse, given the situation that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, are those spots just being filled? And if, in fact, it's true that law enforcement or other non-EV vehicles are just parking at probation, if right. those spots are getting consistently filled and there aren't the numbers of charging. Because I thought that report said that we had over 1,000. It's now becoming more private citizens using the charging stations than county vehicles. In the beginning, it was the other way around. But now it's...
You know what? During this workday, and county vehicles are being used, the EV vehicles, it may be a little tougher.
Mm-hmm.
Nights and weekends, there's no excuse for the vehicles to be there. None. Unless they're charging, but then get somebody there, get them out of there after a couple hours.
Yep.
And that's it. If somebody goes up on a Saturday afternoon, there shouldn't be county vehicles parked. If they want to go out to lunch, charge your vehicle, there should not be any county vehicles parked there, in my opinion.
I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, but it's happening all the time.
Yeah.
Not just once in a while.
So that's why it's important we have a discussion.
Well, can
about
we
it
come up with some ideas then? I mean, if you look through the resolution,
yeah.
it has incorporated a lot of those. Now, there's a 2-hour limit. You want to put a 3-hour limit. You don't want to tow it. You want to give a $25 fine.
Yeah, and if we do the fine, what I'm curious about is how. So if we put in, who enforces that? Would that maybe
the sheriff's in the resolution?
Not just the sheriff, but could Kingston police ticket? I mean,
it's got to be written in a resolution,
and they'd have to be willing to do it,
right? And it's county property, so.
So it would just be probably the sheriff.
Well, unless it's written in a resolution that the sheriff's office or any other.
Or on-site security, or that would they be able to?
They don't have
a lot of them are sheriffs. A lot of them are sheriffs.
Yeah, but they're security. They're not enforcement.
No, some of them are sheriffs.
Like in the county building,
they're
deputy sheriffs.
One of the deputies are in there, but the guys at night aren't.
Right.
You know, and if I can interject a little bit for a penalty phase, since there are limited parking spots for the EV vehicles, it seems to be similar to the handicap parking spaces. You'll see one or two in a lot. If you're going to do an enforcement, do the enforcement similar to the handicapped parking spaces, which there's the first offense is, I don't know, say $50, and then it escalates to $250, I think, is the maximum. So that would definitely be a big deterrent. And prior to, education-wise, you can give some warning tickets out and say, look, these are the fines associated with you parking here. If it becomes an issue when there's government vehicles parked there, then it needs to be addressed with their supervisors.
Can I ask,
in a town like New Paltz, for example, just because that's where I see parking enforced most close to my home, is it only officers that enforce parking, or are those people, aren't those just ticket people? I don't know
it's Traffic Violations Bureau, so they're there. Solely to parking tickets, and they're a peace officer. They're sworn to do that. They basically do the meter tickets. When the meter's expired, they issue a summons. The police officers can issue a summons in a meter area if it's a handicapped zone or something like that. They generally don't. Well, the meter tickets
meter
do as well. Generally, they don't write the expired meter tickets. It's just something that's, like I said, like a handicapped parking or parked in the wrong direction, that type of a thing.
And let me add just a follow-on. Meter tickets go to court? Or yes. If you don't pay the fine?
You have a right, I mean, you have due process of law. You have a right to plead not guilty and explain your issue in court as to why you feel you're not guilty to it. You know, sometimes these are actually supposed to be calibrated, and if they're not calibrated, they got to...
Sometimes
it's the enforcement end's got to prove that this is calibrating. These are the days it was calibrated.
Yeah, this is something we have to think about in terms of the ticketing too, because even determining, because we're not talking about metered spots in terms of, well, I guess when you plug in, that starts a time limit, but when it stops charging, it stops.
So somebody could cheat, like somebody could say, come back and
right.
this.
I mean, we could have a hot,
we could have a hotline. If this ticket's being hogged, call the sheriff's dispatch. Save the dispatchers.
But you have to verify how long it's been there is what I'm saying. Like, we have to think through.
It can be similar to overnight parking on the streets and stuff like that, where you have
snowboarding
tickets.
Get cameras.
And what they do is the enforcement goes out and marks the tire and see if it's moved.
They got cameras in dispatch. Well, every building kind of gives you cameras.
Some do, but you can put them
right on the parking spots, and somebody can sit there and dispatch it.
So, just to devil's advocate, the discussion is going to be about resources to do it, about the time and the energy to do, you know, in terms of the ticketing component, and then the going to court component with those that are.
Well, I think hopefully education will resolve a lot of it. It shouldn't be an issue because. Theoretically, they should be patrolling the lots looking for handicap violations or fire lane violations. Primarily in a private lot, they're the only two that can be enforced unless it's written into legislation, which we have to do. So there are people there enforcing those laws as well, so why not do the EV laws?
Right.
You know, incorporate it with it.
I think what you were saying earlier is that the best starting point is to get rid of the non-EV vehicles out of there. I think that would take care of the
$50 through $250 fine potential would definitely be a deterrent.
Absolutely. I agree with you. Absolutely. That's the best way. I think that's the best starting point. And clearly, like you're saying, this is an evolving discussion. Then we can figure out the finer, you all can figure out the finer points.
Well, your input's been helpful. Thank you.
I was thinking about the time, but I don't think it would work anyway. But if it's fully charged, that would be. Are you notified on your phone when your car is charged?
Yes, you are. If it's fully charged. So people can, if you say that if you go past, we give you another 15 minutes or half, like a half an hour of grace period. And if you don't make it, then we ticket you. People will come.
Does it show on there?
They will. Because nobody's going that far anyway.
It's been charged? Yes.
Nobody's going that far anyway.
Too bad.
No, they're not going an hour from their car.
They're right there. Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
I mean, you could even have a maximum shut off at one point, and it notifies the owner of the vehicle via the iPhone or whatever.
That's what I'm saying, but
I'm talking about the charging station.
Yes, that can also do that. Once the car takes.
Well, that's my point. The county should calibrate it or set a time limit on it.
Yes.
And then have a delay.
That's a great point.
You know,
and have a delay until the vehicle's. Right.
We should find out if that's possible with the current, with the charge point system.
Okay.
Yeah,
or you could
Tom
say,
is really
you
good
just
on
say
it. See, Tom knows.
Yeah.
I've spoken to him a few times.
Right.
Even if you needed a 15-minute charge, you just say you could stay there for 4 hours max.
Hi, everybody. My name is Michael Kam. I'm from Avril Park, east of Troy.
Sure.
I founded the Capital District EV Drivers Group. I just wanted to chime in that the charge point system does not only give you a text or a phone call. You can set it in your settings when the car is done charging, but it'll even give you a message prior to that saying it's drawing very little power, it's almost finished.
Yes.
So you get two different. Mm. Yeah.
So there's no reason to leave your car there an hour after it's done charging.
No, absolutely not. And most people have smartphones and the app. Whoever's charging.
But the reason I would disagree and just say that I think an hour is reasonable. 2 hours is a long time.
Past. I'll let you decide because
I don't have an EV vehicle, but I could imagine charging, saying, okay, I'm assuming my vehicle is going to take 4 hours. That's not a good example. 2 hours to charge, and now I'm in court, and I get this thing, and I can't get out because I'm in court.
It's different than a parking meter.
Yeah, but you can't always run out in five minutes.
No, then you get a $10 ticket.
It's a moving.
Then you get a $5 or $10
it's a
ticket,
moving target.
Just like your parking meter.
But I feel like we're trying to solve a problem that may not yet be a problem.
I would think 97% of the time, people, if they're having lunch, they can run out. Park it next to, you know, take it out of the EVV spot and move it to another spot. 99% of the time they can do that. The 1 or 2% of time where they're in court or they're doing something and they get a ticket, then you set up an appeals process or something. They can write and say, hey, I was in court. Well, let's see the transcripts of the court. You know, it's I think the key is the turnover. Get the people to use it. Get them charged. Get them the heck out of there. That's it.
I hear you. The other thing we can do is if there's
the spots are open in front of the charger, even one to the left, and you know that the connector will reach your
car, and
you're not going to be back in time, you park one over to the left, you plug in, so you leave the spots right in front of the charger open, and we have little tags you can hang on the charge cord or dry eraser type things we leave on our dashboard, and we say, you know, if you know, past say noon, feel free to unplug me. And yeah, so,
yeah, it's all solvable problems.
Yes.
Yeah, we're not going to take any action tonight, obviously, but I appreciate everybody's
input. Yeah, I appreciate the input, too, and let's get some.
Thank you all for that. I think it's incredible that you all are doing this, and we have this in the first place. I think we're really leading on this.
And hopefully the new charging stations will alleviate some of the problems, too, because then we could maybe just have dedicated ones.
There's going to be one here, too.
Right, right.
Yeah, there's one
here. There's
one out there, but
I think we're getting
one. Should I get their contact information?
Yeah, can legislator...
Can you put your email address or something
that way
we can
keep you guys up
you?
To speed on what's
sure,
going
absolutely.
On?
Do you have more questions?
So is that good? Everybody happy with the discussion? We're good with this for night, right?
Yeah.
And then we'll follow
but let's,
up.
And let's get some information in the interim.
Yeah.
I'll work on it. You and I can talk. Yeah.
Okay. Evelyn?
Yes.
How are you? Would you like to... Do you mind?
Great.
Yes, okay.
Great.
Evelyn is from Citizens for Local Power. And we'll give you the floor.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. Citizens for Local Power is working with a working group of elected officials from various municipalities in the county. We've had some conversations with the Ken Cornell and with the executive. I think we may have had some meetings with this committee before my time in CLP. But we've got a working group now that's actively designing a community choice aggregation program for those municipalities in the county that are interested. That's, if you're not familiar with CCA, it's an opportunity to pool the buying power of residents and small businesses in the municipality on an opt-out basis so that we can negotiate with energy suppliers to get better rates, to get cleaner power, and ultimately to build out clean power infrastructure here in the county. And so we're really excited about the progress that the working group is making towards defining what that program may look like and setting up a timeline for its implementation. One of the things that we really want to do is a study of the potential for clean energy resources here in the county, how we match resources with demands, how we look at the potential for where the best energy efficiency opportunities are, where the best local renewable generation opportunities are, and how to design cost-effective programs that will appeal to residents and small businesses. So,
you guys are busy.
We are very busy. So Kevin Cahill has submitted a budget request for $190,000 so that we can do that resource study and a business plan for the CCA that would really move us forward in terms of that planning process. And so I'm here to ask if you might be willing to write a letter of support for that budget request.
Should we distribute it?
Yes.
Jonathan took the liberty of writing something up.
Yeah, so I was fortunate because, as you guys know, I serve as the Environment Committee's liaison to the Climate Smart Committee, where this subject came up. It's a very fascinating endeavor that they're taking. I mean, I've done some research myself, and the actual where it's been successful, the actual rate savings, you know, are legitimate, and also just for consumer choice, consumer protection. But while still utilizing your local utility and the stakeholders in the municipalities. So I just took the liberty of, because of how quickly the budget process is coming up, in which Speaker Hasty, who, you know, Assemblyman Cahill essentially has to get buy-in to include this in the Assembly's budget requests, is coming up down at the end of this month, that the faster we can move if we choose to support it, the better. So that's why the letter is already here for your consideration. But also, it was great that Evelyn's here if you have any questions, because I'm sure she can answer them better than I can.
Yeah, no, I mean, the organization, the group that you represent, how many times do you meet? I mean, how many people are on it? It seems like it's just an overwhelming task. I mean,
So Citizens for Local Power is a research and education organization. There's about a half a dozen of us who are the core of that group that meet weekly.
Oh, so that's a lot of work.
And the CCA is one of our major initiatives, although we're also active in the whole state reforming the energy vision process. We were parties to the latest Central Hudson rate case. We're involved in a NYSERDA-funded project to help municipalities convert their streetlights to LEDs. So a few other things underway, but the CCA is really our main program, because we really see it as a way to massively accelerate green energy here in the county.
Yeah.
Have you been successful in reaching out to almost all the municipalities in the county, or what kind of feedback have you gotten?
We have a handful of municipalities in the county that are active on the working group. Carl Chipman is the chair of the working group, so he's communicating with all of the municipalities and keeping everybody up to date on the project. And we have been really working on that working group with the municipalities who are most keenly interested to shape the program, and then looking to do a much bigger outreach this summer once we have kind of more of a timeline and a plan to bring to everybody.
So but I know I was sent the Association of Towns and Villages unanimously wrote a letter in support of this grant funding as a whole.
Right, you sent us that email. No, it's great. I mean, I certainly support signing the letter.
So I'll move that we, or do we have to move, or just have to sign?
I don't know.
We can move it.
So I'll move it.
Seconds. Any other discussion?
I would just like to ask, and I know we get kept abreast by both Jonathan and Manna from Climate Smart in our Climate Smart updates, but as you move forward in the process and it starts to become more critical to reach out to the communities, if you can keep that information flowing toward us so we can, because just as an example, I don't know if my home communities are attending not only just the meetings, but even the supervisors' meetings right now. So I would love to be able to bring it back to talk to the community.
Marbletown, I think, is pretty active, right? Because I've read a lot about the street lights.
Evelyn, did you list the towns that have been participating in
this? I don't have a list here. I can look and see. Kingston, New Paltz Town and Village, Marbletown, Rosendale have all been active on the working group. We've had folks from, I'm going to leave some out. We've had folks from other communities present at one or more meetings.
Could we maybe include you in our emails and every couple months?
Absolutely.
Come every month, maybe just come and anything you need from us.
Absolutely.
Or you know, it's really...
I have her email,
good.
So I
think. Yeah,
so,
I'd be very glad to come back and update.
Yeah, no, it would be great.
And so. We're going to do we're calling it a CCA summit, but we're going to bring together folks from different communities around the state who are working on CCAs to talk about the various program ideas we have and the challenges as we develop our projects. So there's folks out in Tompkins, in Erie. There's an active CCA in Westchester right now. So we're looking in early May to get those groups together. And most of that day is going to be working sessions for those folks. But we're trying to have a part of that day that would be more open to local officials to do some education about what CCA
like that,
is.
You did a forum like that a couple years ago.
Yeah.
That was amazing. I mean, it was really an amazing eye-opening where you had the gentleman on... Skyping in with the amazing energy.
Yeah,
it was really, it was incredible. It was here in the college.
Yeah.
A lot of amazing information.
Are you looking into these companies now that are looking to purchase farms to put up the...
that's an issue that we've been somewhat active in. We held an educational forum about things that landowners should know when they're approached.
That was last year, right?
Yeah,
last summer,
last
maybe?
Yep.
Is it starting to move in Ulster County, or have you heard of people being approached?
Definitely people have been approached. I don't know if any of those projects are moving forward, but definitely.
Because there's no real zoning laws for them right now, are there? Do they have zoning laws in a lot of communities?
It varies by community.
Really?
Yeah.
I know Woodstock is developing. They talk about it in Manna's Climate Smart Committee all the time, an overlay for zoning. And Woodstock is, I think,
Gardner's in the process.
Rochester's investigating.
They're looking into
it.
But right now there's no laws, right? I mean, that I know of, or no regulations.
We have seen it.
And some of these are not very good for the landowners, ultimately.
Right.
So they warn them about things to look out for.
And we don't want to lose prime land.
Yeah, you know, it's tough because the alternative is you could have houses on it. So you own solar panels or you own houses. You got to try to strike a balance of.
We now we're facing the zoning issues, but in the early on stages, it was partially also allowing landowners to not be taken advantage of in terms of their rights, signing away long-term agreements whereby they'd be responsible for changes in taxing on farmland, et cetera, and also long-term maintenance agreements, if not spelled out, right? I mean, those are things that, because it sounds very attractive when you're approached by a company that says they're going to pay you X amount of dollars a year on land that isn't being actively farmed.
Right. No, definitely it's.
Yeah. The other issue, and this came up at the county EMC meeting last time, is this whole thing with the Public Service Commission and whether they're going to continue net metering pricing or whether they're going to go to a valued pricing for the energy that you produce. There's a lot of confusion about that. There's a lot of uncertainty as to whether you're going to, particularly for the bigger projects, you're going to be getting less, and how much less are we going to get for the amount that we're actually producing versus the going rate for your kilowatt hour? Just so you know, that's out there. We have written a letter to the Public Service Commission, and you'll get a copy of that.
Oh, that's great.
But that's a whole issue that may adversely affect people wanting to invest in solar, whether it's bigger solar, whether it's solar on landfills, whatever. Even our town is now saying, no, I don't know, we're not going to get some sort of rebate back on our investment here.
Right. All right. Thank you. Evelyn. Is that okay? I mean, is that... Yes, we definitely will keep you on the...
And I'll send you a copy of the letter once
okay,
I scan it
fantastic.
In.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Jonathan, thank you.
Absolutely. Can I be open on Friday?
Thank you. Dave, do you have anything on EMC you want to...
No, that's about it right now.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so now we'll move to the resolutions. Resolution 80, authorizing the chairman of the Ulster County Legislature to enter an agreement with the Ulster County Soil and Water Conservation District for the 2017 appropriation. Any discussion? This was all approved in the budget last year. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried 5-0. Number 82, reappointing a member. Let me get to resolution 82 to member to the Soil and Water Board.
Mr. Van Nostrand, reappointing him.
I'll
move it.
Ron will move it. Let's see, Bartels second.
Can I speak to
her? Yeah, sure.
So I put in a call to Gary because Mr. Van Nostrand advised the board at the last meeting that he is looking to step down. Gary had asked and Len Tantillo had asked if he could stay on for a little bit longer while they look for an alternative, and he said okay. So I'm assuming what we want to do is...
Why do we want to reappoint him then? Because he stays on till a replacement is made.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering too. I don't want to... I did not have a chance to speak to Gary. I feel like Gary would say, just reappoint him and we'll replace him when we get someone else.
It's not that easy though. Because if he doesn't resign, and doesn't show up, there's nothing you can do.
No, he shows up.
But if he says I don't want to...
I don't think we're going to have a problem with him showing up. He had health issues that he's raised as a concern. So I'm being upfront with this board and saying that that's, you know, he raised the issue in a public manner at the last board. Go ahead.
I have an email. When was your, I don't know when your last board meeting was sent on January 24th.
Last board meeting was third week in February.
Okay, so it was after this. Because we got an email from Gary saying that Fred had contacted him and asked to be reappointed.
So, I mean, I'm fine with reappointing him. I just think we need to be aware that, and I'll talk to Gary about...
I mean, it's
Gary
a little concerning when the executive director is pushing to have somebody reappointed to the board when a person says they might not be interested in doing it. I mean, do you want to hold off for a month?
Well, I don't think...
I mean, we didn't hear from the gentleman. I'd like to hear from the gentleman.
This email says that he asked...
Yeah, but it's from Gary.
Gary asked him to...
But I'm telling you, at that meeting, he said, "I'm saying that I'm probably going to need to be replaced soon." He elaborated on health
issues.
So
why don't we take no action? He stays on the committee.
Yeah, he does.
He stays
correct?
On. He's not off the board. Sure, you're on until your replacement's name.
Not in every board. Some boards have an expiration date.
So why don't we confirm
that?
Well,
his term expired 12/31, so according to this, he's not on the board. He's either on the board or he's not.
Why don't we confirm if he stays on until replaced, and if we have to have
an emergency... Well, has he been voting in January and February?
Yeah.
Well, then he's on, because his term ended December 16.
Right.
So
let's take no action. That's my... I mean, I'll do it.
I'm comfortable either way. I'm comfortable either way.
I'll do whatever you guys want to do, but it is a little
bit... I think it's fine. If we find out, you guys could just
have
a quick meeting and vote on it.
I'd say let me talk to Gary and...
And this gentleman.
And let's find out. Let me talk to Gary. Can you confirm what's happened with the term if not acted upon?
He's on the board.
Because it's a 3-year term, I believe,
no, it's two. It's 2018, it looks like it.
Okay, so
it's a 2-year...
So let me check what the term is tomorrow with Mary.
Please.
She does that appointment program. And then I'll let you know.
I'm still concerned when the executive board.
I mean, if he's already been voting on issues.
He's on it.
He's on the board, right? I mean, we can't change that now.
No, I don't think we want to undo that. But I see your point. If he wants to be off and he just stays on by virtue of not being reappointed, then
let's
we can just leave him on while we look for another appointment.
Let's reach out to try to find somebody else if he's... You know, usually when you want
he's
to get off the board...
He's a wonderful gentleman. He's been on for a long time, but he's the one who raised this issue,
when you
want
to get off
me.
The board, you're not...
Yeah,
you
he raised the
issue. You're not going to change your mind. Yeah.
Tracy's not trying to get rid of him.
No, I'm not. He raised the issue. I understand that.
Exactly. So. She's just looking out for him.
But
yeah.
Exactly.
We need to find somebody else.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I don't know... Yeah, I'm okay with holding off. But now we're getting on to the next one, which is
okay.
Going to have to...
So we're
going to
take no action on Resolution 82.
Yeah.
Resolution 83, reappointing members to the Soil and Water Conservation Board. That's you, Tracy.
I'll move it for discussion, but I have a discussion board.
Tracy, Jim's going to take Hector's spot?
Hector's going to take Jim's spot?
No.
Jim is on right now, and I haven't been able to speak to Jim, but
Jim
I spoke to Hector.
Are they one-year terms? Oh, we put
Jim
on last
terms.
Year. We put Jim
yeah,
on.
And last year we actually put Jim... You put myself and Jim on for 2-year terms, which is a mistake, so we're correcting that by making it 1-year terms right now. But Jim has had a problem with attending. So the meetings are half the year they're in the morning in the winter months, and then when it comes into farming months, they go to night meetings. Jim's had an appointment, had a problem attending the morning meetings because of his work schedule.
So do you
want
to talk to him? Want to hold off on this and we'll talk to him?
Yeah, I would like to talk to him because I don't know if he... I asked Hector and I asked Ken Ronk. Ken Ronk wasn't sure if there was someone in the Republican caucus that wanted to do it. And I asked Hector if Jim wanted to do it because I hadn't been able to speak to Jim directly because that was a question coming from the last meeting out of Gary as well.
So let's hold off on this one too because you guys are on the board anyway.
If we're... Yeah,
there's
that's
no
what
changes.
I would recommend doing.
Just
so that we can be certain about what we're talking about.
And then maybe we can
and if for some reason we needed to have an emergency
maybe
meeting, that we have an emergency.
Maybe knows somebody who's interested in getting on that board, too. Knows people that would be interested in getting on the board from the EMC.
Oh,
would be interested in getting on if there's an opening.
Don't these have... Well, these have to be legislative appointments.
No, the first one.
The first one has to be a Grange appointment, just so...
A landowner.
From a Grange.
From a
Grange.
Which I don't...
What's a Grange? A farm?
No, organization. I've only heard of it over in Dutchess County. Do we have a Grange?
I know there's a Grange in New
York. Is that a county law or a state law?
State. I think it's coming from the state. It's based on
soil and water state
organizing.
Wow.
One of the members of the board is supposed to be a non-farming public member. We don't have that. We've always had... two legislators and all the rest.
A farmer, right?
We've had four farmers.
Right.
And these are people serving with distinction for long, long periods of time that like doing it, but that's why I say they're getting on it as a word. Yeah.
Trace, we're not voting for you here.
Okay. That's okay. I don't take it
okay. personally. Resolution 85, confirming appointment to the Oaks County RRA.
I'll say be determined. Who is it?
I thought Dave Gordon.
Yeah, so I don't know what's happening here.
Oh, we don't know what's happening on these.
There are two people asking to be reappointed. It's my understanding folks can...
There are two people asking...
But they're chairman appointments, right?
No, one's a chairman and one's a minority appointment. And in the minority, we talked about we talked about all three. There's three potential candidates, all three of which
are all three are Democrats, which is fine.
Yeah, and all three which we interviewed in the last cycle. So I mean, or we interviewed all the time. So I don't, but I don't. The Democratic caucus didn't come out with a unified decision.
And I don't think the Republicans came out.
And the Republicans, I don't. Yeah, Ken had said at the last meeting, Ken had said that he would appoint Lisa Mitten. I looked back at the minutes. He's suggesting appointing David Gordon. I don't think anyone has
or Charlie. I spoke to David Gordon. He made a point. He may just reappoint Charlie too.
Okay, so I haven't had any.
Yeah, I thought he was going to come tonight.
I don't know.
So we might as well take no action on this either, because
well,
it's going to
even give us a suggestion. It says TBD.
So is it Hector's appointment?
And
no, it's a majority appointment and a minority appointment. So the minority appointment is a recommendation from the minority to the chair.
And the chair still can say yes or no. I thought they were all chair appointments, technically.
Technically, they're all chair
appointments. Because we set up the vote on the floor.
Technically, they're all chair appointments, yes.
Yeah.
Technically, they're all chair appointments, but one, the chair has to take the recommendation of the minority on one.
Right.
And we've had a long history of fighting over what that one is, because it moves. We have also had a long history of debate about whether or not we should make a more fair balance. I mean, that goes back to my first years on the legislature because it's 4-1 split. But
that's state legislation. We could ask the state to change it.
Yeah.
Because the state created the RRA. So all that language is state
right.
language. It's
but,
not county
but we've talked, you were there for conversations,
no,
you know, whatever. 10,
listen, for
years
we couldn't find anybody to serve on the board. We were happy to get anybody to serve because for years nobody wanted them to do it.
So I don't know. Maybe can you reach out to Ken and
call him tomorrow?
Yeah, and then maybe we can
I
reconnect tomorrow.
Add in that it was my understanding that actually Ken was going to reappoint Dave Gordon,
that's
and we were going to interview the other two at caucus.
That's when
we
last left.
Okay, I just talked to Ken 2 days ago, 3 days ago, because I, you know. Just when the months come together, I didn't think about it. And he wanted to talk about this, and then he told me what's going on. So then part of the conversation was, well, why don't we just pick Charlie and then let the Democrats pick who they want to pick?
Yeah, we, you know, and...
Then the Democrats would either pick
Ken's committed to
Dave or Lisa. Then that would be up to you.
Yeah, we definitely, the Democratic caucus was operating under the assumption, based on what Ken had said, that Ken was going to appoint Dave Gordon. So the last way it was left,
yeah,
was
I'm
that
not
we
speaking
were,
for Ken.
No, was I know
so
was
know.
That we were going to interview Charlie and Lisa. If that's not what's happening, then the Democratic caucus should know what's happening.
I'll reach out to him
so that whatever appropriate interviews can happen. I mean, there might be a certain, you know, I don't know how it's going to shake out in terms of discussions, etc., and debates. And this is always a heated.
We could interview all three.
Yeah, we could.
If it's up in the air.
Well, all three are Democrats.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
So no action on those two.
Well, there's no names, really. And Legislator Ronk didn't put a name forward, Chairman Ronk. So it'd be...
That was basically... So it's, no,
and you guys didn't give him a name to put forward either.
No. Because we were going to do the interviews tomorrow. Based on what we were told he was doing, and I didn't speak to him directly either.
Okay.
So it's told for
I
me.
Did
it's
speak to him. I literally spoke to him 3 days ago.
Yeah.
And we spoke briefly on this.
And
you know?
He said to you, Charlie was the last name.
Well, we were talking,
to
and he told me, he goes, you know, I think the current board works well together. You know, that's what he's the feedback he's getting from all the board members is everybody's working well together, and I hate to vote somebody off the board that's. They are doing a good job, interested in it. It's a volunteer board. We generally don't vote people off of volunteer boards who were active and doing their job. So, you know, we talked about the issue. And I just said to him, I said, well, to settle it, to take Charlie out of it, make your appointment Charlie. And he goes, oh, that might be a solution then. And, you know, the Democrats can pick between Lisa and Dave. So he said, you know, he didn't say yes, but he said, that's something to think about.
Right.
So... To make your guys' job try a little harder, but you guys have a hard job either way. But
so,
it's one of those things, where, you know, it is so, what it is, but I just, it's tough voting people out of the boards who have been volunteers doing it, you know?
And you know what? This is a different cycle since one of them is defined minority appointment, but I wonder also about the possibility of this committee interviewing all three. I mean, I know that'll make some heads spin. I think our caucus ought to do it, too, for the defined Democratic. But it's certainly, since we're the committee that continues to have oversight, it's...
And that's how we've done it in the past.
We've done it sometimes and not other times.
But there were openings last time. You know,
right.
There were four vacancies. There weren't...
But what's good about this committee even having a part of an interview process, even if... we end up not having a say. Let's say we have an interview process,
right.
And Ken picks one, and the minority caucus picks the other. At least we've been introduced to these people and heard them in the earliest phases. It's a different time in terms of talking to them about their beliefs than once you're on the board.
I think that was the main point for a caucus wanting to have actually meet them, just give them the respect of meeting them.
Yeah,
because not everybody in our caucus.
Do you want to do next month again? We can invite them to come.
Why don't you see what Ken's doing? We'll talk to Garth. You're going
to
be at
I'll be there
tomorrow. So we can just, you and I can even just touch base on the
issues. Yeah, we can even grab them there.
Yeah.
That's true. They're both going to be there.
Yeah.
They can pop in and out of, it'll rotate them.
we didn't have Dave coming though.
Oh, okay. I thought there was two.
Yeah.
We could. So, we're taking no action. Sorry, everybody. Sometimes that's all right.
We're having a discussion.
We're moving forward. And then, so now we're on to new business. Any new business? I think we got a lot of old business still we're butting up.
I have one thing just to circulate around for thought. It hasn't gone through the Climate Smart Committee, but a few of us were at a meeting over the weekend called the Elected Officials to Protect New York's Environment, and there was a resolution about a template of a resolution for divesting from fossil fuel, like, I guess it's really directed at the comptroller, not to be investing in fossil fuel infrastructure.
The state comptroller.
So I just wanted to pass it around for people to read, you know, and think about. I don't know how far it'll go, but anyway, I happened to pick up a bunch of extra copies, so
yeah,
I thought I'd pass it around. That's all.
All right, Trace. Thanks, Anna. Want to talk about? Yeah.
Okay. So
briefly. I got to leave soon.
I think probably by now everyone knows that the governor vetoed New York City's bill, which is a part of. It's an ongoing debate about whether or not that was overreach and home rule, et cetera. And New York City's bill is not in any way, shape, or form what we were proposing, because New York City's bill, it didn't outlaw plastic bags at all. It was strictly the fee component. Okay, so I've been considering how to move forward. The governor has promised to, in his explanation, he suggested that this would be better served at the state level, that a unified law that would cover everyone makes more sense. I'm paraphrasing, and he's promised to handle it in an expeditious factor. I'm trying to find out what exactly that looks like and what people he's bringing to the table to have the discussion. But I'm inclined, and I'm going to do a little more research, but I'm inclined to wait before pushing something forward, while the state may be pushing something forward that's statewide. But I'd like to know what the rest of the committee thinks.
I mean, I think, in my opinion, we should move forward with it, because I remember with the smoking ban, Ulster County and Dutchess County were the first two counties. And once we did it, then another county did it, and then all of a sudden the state just passed the law. So if the governor could say anything he wants or she wants, but yet if there's no kind of grassroots supports or communities doing it, then they might say, well, there's obviously not a lot of support out in the state to do this. So, you know, even if it's not if it's just a simple one, just to start to say, hey, this is what we're going to move forward. It's going to go in effect in 6 months.
That'll give them time to move forward with it.
And be figuring out what they're going to do.
I mean, I support it. The fee, I don't think, would pass the legislature, but I do think a ban on plastic bags and just using paper or reusable, I think it's a good step.
Yeah, if I could just expand, the governor's, and again, I'm paraphrasing, it's not in front of me, but the governor's take on the fee, and this was strictly a fee, not a ban.
What he was claiming
about the fee was that it was almost a windfall for the businesses, because the businesses charging it would get all the money, which when we talked about a fee, we have the same thing, but the distinction is important to note. So he was saying that the businesses charging the fee would see this increased profit basically for no reason. Because a bag, a plastic bag, the kinds we're talking about, does not cost 5 cents. 10 cents is what was being proposed, I believe. In our case, when we talked about a fee, whether it was small or anywhere from a penny, because I think you suggest making it as low as a penny just to have a fee, but not just be nominal, all the way up to 10 cents, our fee, and I think we need to think about it if we are going to continue moving forward. Of course, it's what's going to pass the legislature. But our fee, the rationale for putting it in place was because with a ban on plastic bags, it would force a default to paper bags, which would mean especially our small businesses would feel a sting because they'd have to buy so many more paper bags for people who weren't going to make a change, for people who are just going to say, oh, there's no plastic, but I'll just take that free paper, which costs you 10 times more, even 5 cents. Some cases wouldn't offset it if they're the higher end bags. So that fee was an attempt to offset the raised cost of paper versus hurting small businesses. Because I think that's where if we attempt to put a plastic bag ban without a fee for paper, I anticipate that in the public hearing process, we will hear from businesses saying this is going to be a giant hit to us.
When we were kids, you could only get paper bags. There was no such thing as plastic bags when I was growing up.
I know.
So they're going to just go back to the model that they did for 100 years.
But if the
aim
is really...
Am I correct that it also opened up municipalities to, when they just banned the bag, that the Retailers Association instantly turned around and filed lawsuits? Because it was unfair.
The legality of the plastic. They did. I think there was debate.
It was even the plastic industry, I think, got in on some of the lawsuits.
And we would expect, I think, in that case, the plastic industry to come in. But I think that they've proven not to be very successful, those kinds of lawsuits. But this is something we'd have to think about. Why don't I...
Can I say something?
Part of the point was that wasn't producing the paper bags...
Harmful
environmentally, yeah. More so than the plastic on the front end, but not on the back end.
Yeah,
it was kind of like the reverse.
Right.
Well, they don't decompose. You know, they just sit around.
But to produce the paper bags,
to produce the bags and stuff
is more less environmentally friendly than producing the plastic just originally.
And really, what you're trying to do is change habits so that people don't just go with a different throwaway model; they bring their own.
Well, that's the
bags.
Whole idea of it, people bring their own reusable bags.
Which
that's
is happening more and more, but...
Right.
Yeah.
But it's a slow... You know, you got to start the kids doing it. It's going to be tough to get people like me to do it, even though I try to do it, but half the time I forget the bag at home.
Yeah, you know, I was in a clothing store, a child's clothing store, about a month ago, and the woman in front of me, which I have to admit, I'm pretty good, not 100% at the supermarket, but I don't think about it when I'm... in a clothing store, and a woman in front of me had a bag, just like in the supermarket. She said, I just moved here from San Francisco, and it's just prohibited everywhere. So she said, it'd take a little getting used to, but you just start carrying a bag with you for whatever, anywhere you're going. You have your bags, you're going to buy clothes, you have your own bags.
Yeah, no. Well, ideally, that's where everybody...
I'm hopeful that we're going to get there no matter what, and I personally would like to be on... like you're saying, be on the front end of that wave rather than riding it in with the governor. But I also want to... why don't I take this month to look at what we have down, I'll bring it back, and I'll also relook at the governor's statement and see if I can get... Maybe, Jonathan, you can also help me figure out what's happening at the state in terms of, because he's talked about this commission to get together to make this discussion happen.
Go in and no, Jim, thanks. Yeah, Manna had her hand up. Is that, you had your hand up, Manna.
Okay. I just want to put in a good word for Emmanuel's. I was in there the other day, and I forgot my bag, and they handed me a beautiful reusable bag that looks like a paper bag with handles sure. on it, and it says Emmanuel, so it's good advertising for them, and they're just being so proactive. And now, instead of, you know, like I've got 10 bags in the car, but I will always pick the Emmanuel's bag because it's ideally designed for food shopping. And it's free. So it can't cost that much. And somebody sold them the idea that this is good advertising for their store. So I think they're ahead of the curve, and I just wanted to throw that into the conversation.
Emmanuel told me he would come and support a plastic bag ban.
Wow.
You know, when Marbletown was looking to do it on their own,
yeah.
he was nervous. He thought it should be done countywide. Because he said that he could be at a competitive disadvantage with it. But he did say if it was a countywide one, he goes, I will support it 100%.
I should have brought it in because it's really stunning.
Next one.
Jim? I read today that Warren County is also looking at a plastic bag ban. So you might want to check with them.
Warren
County.
Okay. Thank you.
What they're doing.
Thanks.
And also, since we've been having this conversation, I knew that the grocery stores took plastic bags back, which now I'm taking huge bags because I never thought about your paper towel, the plastic around your paper towel, around your toilet paper, all that stuff.
But I have to speak to that in maybe not such a positive way, although the jury's out. The regulation that requires that big box stores, which is a DEC regulation, that requires big box stores to take back those plastic bags, does not regulate or stipulate what they do with them. So at my local supermarket, I've asked, where does this go? And they said, it gets recycled. And I said, who recycles it? No one could give me a definite answer. So I actually think it's a worthwhile investigation to see if these bags, because the reality of plastic bag recycling is that it takes incredible volumes. You know, you could have a tractor trailer if you're not compressing it into little things. It's similar to the styrofoam issue that we learned when we talked about the.
And I try not to use plastic bags, and I still wind up with a garbage bag full of plastic bags.
Because when you buy a product,
because all the everything, I'm saving it from everything, so it's just like amazing.
Yeah, Christmas time, I started saving all the plastic I have ahead.
Sorry, buddy, I have to leave, so thanks for everybody for coming tonight.
Before you leave, can we just revisit the minutes? Because I realized I was absent, so can we just, I'd like to remove.
No, you still vote on.
I vote on, but I normally abstain, and now that Mary's here, can she just vote?
I'm sure you can have abstained before, but that's fine.
Yeah. Change the vote.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Rich. Okay, so, Manna, I think you were next in terms of Climate Smart Committee.
For Climate Smart? All right, I'll try to be quick also. There are a lot of really good sharing, different things going on in different communities. And then I think the main discussion was about community solar and something, a proceeding that the PSC is going through called the value of distributed energy resources or value of green. Yeah, and some real concerns about that. I recommend it there, and I want to recommend to anyone here who's interested in energy, if you haven't read or listened to a book called The Grid, it really talks about the history start to finish, from 100 years ago when Edison started right through to our current dilemma, which is, things are scaling up in terms of renewables and energy efficiency and storage rapidly. There's still work to be done, but there's a recent report out from Synapse that Riverkeeper and NRDC sponsored, and it talks about how much renewables and energy efficiency we
we tend to marginalize it, but if you drive around, you can't marginalize it anymore. It's everywhere. I mean, it's popping up. And we are soon going to have four of our landfills supporting either community or large-scale solar, or utility-scale solar. So at some point, the grid, we're going to have to deal with the grid, because it was designed to be one way out from big central stations, and now all these local sources of energy are feeding onto the grid, which was really designed to be one way. So I would say that the Public Service Commission proceedings are trying to deal with this, but I've been to some hearings recently, and I really think we need at least a regional, if not a statewide, planning process that takes the whole thing into consideration. And ironically, I was promoting that, and I think Ken Panza forgot. And this week I got a book from him, a copy of The Grid. He said, you might be interested in this. Anyway, there's some discussion of the nuclear subsidy. And then there was discussion of the Shandaken Tunnel, which I really think belongs more in this committee, but from the reservoir, they are spilling into the Lower Esopus again, and some of that sediment is coming from a flush of the Shandaken Tunnel. And Ron Leonard, who is part of Trout Unlimited, brought that question up, and I suggested, you know, that it really is not so directly related to the mission of Climate Smart. And we went over the mission because we don't want to stray from it. Jonathan, anything else that really struck you from that meeting?
Well, I thought in regards to the turbidity and of the Phoenicia Tunnel, that actually might be, because we had formed a subcommittee on waterways, specifically focusing on the Esopus, the issue of the Esopus in Ulster County. So that might be a more, because I know they're beginning to try and open up more dialogue with the DEP and DEC on issues like this. So it might be, I'm sure we welcome him to come here and explain the issue, but that might be another venue as well. I thought about post-meeting. But besides that, no, that type of work.
Can I just say about that? I think if it would be good if he came here and talked about it, if it is an issue, because I don't know if you were in the legislature at that time, Mary, I'm pretty sure you were. Remember the last cycle of the turbidity issue and all the hearings and all, I mean, and it's almost as if at that point that it came to the legislature's attention. It had been escalating for some time in communities. There was an outcry, but at the point that the legislature got involved, I mean, we were already at meetings with 1,000 people at the college, you know, on a regular basis, and it was a screaming war between the city and the county. So if there is a problem, I'd rather start to hear about it now. At the very beginning of the problem, then later.
After a lot of damages.
Yeah. Because this is a very sensitive subject for obvious reasons.
Especially depending on where you live along these areas.
So maybe, Rich isn't here, but maybe the chairman should reach out to Trout Unlimited.
Okay,
and,
I'll ask him too.
Or that subcommittee that was formed.
Or both, yeah.
Or
yeah.
They can contribute. Yeah.
But since we're a standing committee, I think we probably should hear from him too. Dave?
It's just of interest that the city recognizes the turbidity problem, not from the Esopus point standpoint, but what water's arriving down in the city, because the whole project in Gardner over the last 2 or 3 years, it's done now, was to take the two tunnels, one from the Delaware system and one from this system, interconnect them with some pumps, because the Delaware system has far less turbidity in it. So now they can measure that turbidity in Gardner, and they actually pump water in from the Delaware system in to lessen the turbidity going downstream towards towards the city. So it's not like they don't recognize that there's that problem. Right. That's a whole different problem when it goes into the Esopus, but that's how they're dealing with it, getting the water to the city that's cleaner. They're basically like diluting it.
Right. And I think there was a sensitivity, certainly, from communities in our county that the city was very, and I'm going to just generalize this, but that the city was looking out for the city water.
Right.
And at the expense of the communities along the Esopus. And so this is the first time I'm hearing this, which is why it just puts up a very big red flag for me, having gone through it in previous years. So if we can reach out to have Rich reach out to Ron and Trout Unlimited, that would be great. And I know he speaks with them in his capacity on the Catskill Watershed Corporation. Okay. Anything else, Mana, from Smart, Jonathan?
No, I think you covered it.
Okay. The Solid Waste Management Improvement Commission is meeting this Thursday. Our deadline is rapidly, rapidly approaching. So, I think hopefully by next month we'll have something that everyone can read because we'll be very close to the final deadline. Mana, did you want to add anything for Solid Waste Management Improvement?
No, I have not, because we haven't met, and I know what I'll be doing Wednesday night after, you know.
Okay. Does anyone, I know we had an opportunity for new business, but does anyone want to raise any other issues that skip their mind? Okay, so I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll move it.
Second.
All in favor?
Go ahead.
Aye.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you. And did somebody have the time?
8:10.
8:10.
Close enough, 8:11.